Hi, y'all. You're listening to In the Corner Back by the Woodpile.
I'm Spun Counter Guy. Thanks for stopping by. Robert Vaughn was one of those tremendous artists of the 1980s and 90s that put out material that was, in my mind, superior to a lot of the mainstream acts that were selling millions at that time. Tragically, by way of various events, Vaughn and his band, The Shadows, never got their due. But he did manage to record what was probably a fraction of his material, and one of those recordings is getting a reboost, thanks to original producer Randy Layton. Now, Layton has been back by the Woodpile on a few other occasions, but in case you didn't know, he had his own record label called Alternative Records, which worked with such artists as the 77s, Steve Scott, 2 Pound Planet, Robert Vaughn, and others. Songs from the River House was an album that was on Alternative Records, and Layton, even while suffering in the final stages of cancer, has started a GoFundMe campaign to remaster and re-release the record, both on vinyl and digitally. It, of course, has all kinds of additional bonus materials for those who kick in on this project. Now, here's Randy Layton to give us more of the story behind that album. 'Cause your love, it hurt like a knife that cut deep. In those hot summer nights, while my pretty one just sleeps, while my pretty one just sleeps.
Robert Vaughn was somebody that I connected with initially for an album called Love and War, which came out on Exit Records. A label that we know for the 77s and Charlie Peacock and other people, First Strike. Can't forget them. That album came out in 1987. Michael Rowe actually brought them in. They'd gotten a demo tape, and one of the few times they actually did this, they went out of the area where they tended to pick up their own acts, and they went to San Diego to hear them play. And they were quite impressed. And Michael came back thinking, you know, this is the band that actually could be bigger than all of us, you know, because they just have that appeal where they could not only appeal to people, you know, that liked the, you know, the alternative kind of sounding stuff that was coming out of the label, but actually have real hits on, you know, on the album oriented stations, you know, sort of the Springsteen kind of guy where they could see that act filling stadiums. Robert was that charismatic, you know, the band was that good, the songs were that good. Maria was a tiger, you know it wasn't fair. Maria was a slave, but to see her you'd care. And as we know, that really didn't happen. I mean, they got signed. But because Exit was a label that was contracting Island to do promotion, they were always going to be, all the records were always going to be a lower priority with that Island deal in terms of getting a lot of money put behind radio promotion or getting them on TV and all that stuff. Although, ironically, Robert remained the only Exit artist to actually go on national TV, which was American Bandstand, and he did the song Justice.
All right, Robert Vaughn and the Shadows. A lot of music is frivolous, dealing with not very serious. All of your stuff has a message, justice, inequity, and whatever. Are you serious, man?
It seems like in my music I'm a lot more serious than I am in real life.
And again, this is during the Love and War era. And that song actually had quite a bit of airplay nationally. It just died quickly because there was no follow-up from the label in terms of promotion, you know. So by the time they even played American Bandstand, radio was coming off that song. So fast forward, after, you know, the exit collapse, and I wound up actually working with a number of the acts on the label through my own company, Alternative Records. That included Steve Scott and Michael Rowe and so on. And those were all successful. So I came to Robert and said, hey, would you want to work together? And, you know, this is after they'd done a number of showcases, some of which I'd gone to, and they just didn't get picked up by another label. And Robert was like, yeah, well, you know, I think we have an offer from, and I believe it was Mercury, you know, Mercury, and, you know, so we're fine. Thank you. And I went, great. And then, I don't know, probably about 4 to 5 months later, I get a call from Robert, and he said, you know, I got some songs for our new album. I've been working on it. And I just went, new album? I didn't know we were doing one. But yeah, he said the label agreement had fallen through, and he'd got some demos, and he sent me a few of them. And I remember listening to him going, well, yeah, this is good stuff. I'd love to do something. I like, you know, 6 out of the 10 songs here a lot. And Robert's like, yeah, man, well, I've already got more songs than that. And he would send me more. And as it turned out, Robert's a really, at least in those days, he was a very, very prolific guy and recorded a lot of demos. And I remember getting overwhelmed a bit because of the volume of material and the quality of it. And I remember coming back finally and going, you know, look, Rob, I've got like 30 songs on the board. You know, we can't have a 30-song album. So I'm going to pick the best, you know, 15 or 16, and then let's start working with those. So stop it. Stop sending me great songs, which is kind of a funny thing to say. And that's how Songs from the River House was born, was my going through that material and deciding what worked. And it sort of turned into this quasi-concept album about people on the edge, you know, people on the fringes. A lot of character studies, if you will.
Isn't she pretty when she's looking kind of pale? She's working for the weekend, got loneliness for sale. Go with slippers and all that cheap perfume. She's working at the diner, she couldn't have been finer. She just wants out cause she ain't no 9 to 5. A girl in slippers and all that cheap perfume.
Instead of, you know, like the last record, where it was very much geared towards talking about the end times or even political things, this was more just looking at people kind of caught up in situations they had a hard time getting out of. And what made it different probably than I think most, you know, a Christian audiences would have been used to was that it didn't provide, you know, nice, clean answers for each and every one of those. I think the idea was that he got to the end of it and he went, okay, you know, I know these people. I can relate somewhat to these people. And Robert's already, you know, made his statement, so I know where he's standing in terms of his theological background. So it's just, yeah, one of those things. Can Christians, you know, create albums that don't specifically have all the X's and O's, you know, down, that is leaving it to the listener to think about that.
Mama, get daddy's gun. We're going to town. Ain't no banker gonna take our family down.
musically, it was really incredible, just very powerful, well produced, played, lots of different, you know, styles. And live, all these songs came off really great. Robert was really moving towards a solo career at this point. I mean, they were still a Shadows band and they still played these songs live, but it was already changing for him that he was being encouraged by management maybe to kind of take off on his own. So to those ends, he had people like Jack Sonne of Dire Straits, guests on the album, and guys like that. So it was, yeah, a bit different. From that point, you know, I sequenced the album, worked on it. Michael Rowe worked on it for mastering. I was there with him. The idea was always to market it to major labels while I worked it as an indie. And very quickly, we had that major label interest. We had Capitol, we had Sony as the two biggest ones I recall. Capitol wanted to put out my album as it was. And Sony wanted to kind of tear it apart and record some new material, and there were promises of putting him on tour and all this stuff. And against almost everyone else's wishes, Robert and his lawyer went with the Columbia deal, and the record just didn't happen. It never got completed. They re-recorded some of the material, recorded some new songs, but it was just overproduced and didn't really come together. And, you know, it just wasn't as good, I think, by any stretch of the imagination as Riverhouse had been. So they dropped him. I mean, at some point, a guy came back from A&R staff and just said, well, this is really good, but I don't think 1992 is going to be the year of the singer-songwriter, and they let him go. I did take Robert to a company called Miramar, which was already interested in him before Columbia had been, and we were talking about distribution for Alternative as well at the same time. So they took him on, and again, it was sort of a hodgepodge of older material and some newer stuff. That was a small company that had distribution through RCA or BMG, but that record didn't happen either. In each case, I was given up rights to the album I had worked on really hard to points for getting paid back for releasing Robert to these companies, meaning that if I had a point per album, for every album that sold, I would get a dollar. So, you know, if you did really well and sold 100,000 copies, I'd get that, which at that time I was ready to accept because I was trying to make back all the money that I already poured into the album, because there was not only the record, but we'd also shot a video album as well. And all that just went away. And so the Miramar thing doesn't work out. He gets dropped. And yeah, he worked on a few things for the Maranatha company, like Spirit, Love, and Fire, and producing some other people. But that was pretty much the end, or near the end, of Robert working artistically. He just, I think, burned out and really hasn't recorded anything new for a very, very long time. But the Love and War reissue was something that I got to do. That album got expanded to two CDs, got a lot of great material on there, and we were able to go back to original tapes as well, including the multi-tracks, and great response to that. It sold out. It was great. One touch, let my soul fill with fire. One kiss, let me stone cold desire. To do it for love, whatever it takes. She give it a stone cold river chase. To do it for love, whatever it takes. She give it a stone cold river chase. It was a difficult project to pull off in a lot of ways, but I'm glad I did it. But over the years, I'd also been asked about Riverhouse and emails and messages, and there were a number of people that were asking for a vinyl version of that because there were a number of CDs floating around. So it seemed like instead of doing another CD run, why not do a vinyl version? And so it was always conceived as a two-record set in terms of the song flow, even back when it was just a CD. So it seemed to kind of lend itself to the idea of a two-record set and all that. So early this year, even though I was really, really sick, I just wanted to see if that could be done. And so I started putting together a new version of that, which means, a vinyl remaster off the original, and then, which sounds terrific. The guy who does those for us did a great job. I staggered into the bathroom, splashed some water on my face, to look instead. Getting new artwork together and a little bit of resequencing so it everything fit, and then we also added some new material that hadn't been on the CD or the cassette version as well. So it's actually a little bit longer than the original. Love can be cruel or love can be blind. If I had more love, I'd make you mine. As I endlessly look, I can't help but stare. The way you look, I still can't compare. Then I just decided to keep it a very low number. I think there's 175 that we were making available. And we're doing it through a thing called Indiegogo, like we did with the last record. People can also download the digital version of the vinyl as well, so they'll have that too. There's also other additional things they can get. There will be a bunch of songs available for those that are at a certain pledge level that wouldn't be on this project. But it will give you another hour and a half worth of songs or something like that. That was the plan. There's also an unreleased EP called the White Trash Supper Club, which if we made goal, I would bring that one back. That was supposed to be the next record after Riverhouse. And it's fantastic. I mean, no one's ever heard it. And I would love to have that come out. But, you know, the album has some fun. Other than that, because I am dealing with a cancer called multiple myeloma, which is not a great thing, and my body's falling apart, I have to give up the label itself, long term, certainly. So right now, my son Matthias will be, or is in the process of learning to take over the company and what to do. We also have other people that are helping us out, so we can get it done. I don't know if I'll be around to see it come out. I have no idea. I know it sounds dark, but I just want to see it happen. So we're going to see this through. I think this ends in about 3 weeks, and hopefully this will be fun.
The story of In the House of My Friends, because to me it was kind of this mystery track that was an unlisted track on a compilation, but you've included it on this reissue of Songs from the River House, and it's become quite legendary, I think.
Yeah, that compilation, I believe, was No Sense of History, which was years ago, and it was compiling sort of a greatest hits, as it were, at the time, between my label and Stump, which was primarily for DA projects and related. As I was wont to do in that time, sometimes I'd throw in little surprises and Easter eggs, and I threw that one in, unlisted. But that was during the same period of time that I had released Robert to Columbia, or Sony, for the record they were going to do with him. And this is not long after I'd actually put out River House, but you know, their lawyers threatened this and that. And that was just one of the songs that I had in mind for River House, but in the end didn't use it. But I knew they had an interest in the song, but I was so upset with the way I was being treated with Sony that I just said, I'm gonna, with Robert's encouragement, I'm going to go ahead and put it on this, you know, but we'll hide it, you know, they'll never know, which of course, you know, no one did. The odd thing about that track, and I've always loved it, is that it took years, but eventually it got picked up because Robert had a pretty high powered publisher that was primarily known for soundtracks and TV things and, you know, stuff like that. There was a Steven Seagal movie that was so bad that it only came out in Germany, I think. But for whatever reason, that song got licensed for that movie, and I got a lot of airplay over there. I know when I posted a live version of that song on YouTube, I got a lot of responses over the years, like, "Oh, I've always been looking for this song. You know, how do I get it?" Well, you really can't, but, you know, sometimes I'd say, give me your email address, and I'd send them a copy. Somebody posted the actual clip where it's used in the film, and then that got taken down by Sony as well. So it's just been one of those things where, you know, there's people out there that probably have no idea that I'm doing this reissue, but would love to have the song. So here's the way that they can have it.
You want to play with me?
Oh, you want a piece of this?
It's not streamed anywhere. It's not, I mean, even when I put up a trailer clip for the campaign project that included, you know, a bit of that song, it didn't come up through YouTube as something that they recognized. So I felt pretty good about going ahead and, you know, remastering that song and then putting it on. You know, as Robert told me a long time ago, it's like, he might not see any checks from the U.S. stuff, but he gets some odd check from China or, you know, some other country. You just don't know where your stuff is going to wind up.
Someday, we can be together in the house of my friends. Someday, we can be together in the house of my friends.
With this reissue, has Robert Vaughn been involved at all, or has he just given it his blessing and that's that?
Well, he gave it his blessing, and he was all for it when we first brought it up 2 years ago. Instead of going that direction, I first went with Love and War and did that, you know, two CD reissue of that record. When I got done, I felt very burned out on the whole experience of doing projects like that. So I shelved it. But after doing the one for Tana Salisbury, Hit the Switch last year, which is another, you know, two CD version of a single album. This is the one that Larry Norman had produced in 1977. That did really well. I mean, and got a lot of great response. And so I felt like that was probably it, because I'd already been suffering quite a bit with the cancer that I've got, and it's getting really hard to finish stuff. So this year, I didn't think I was going to be doing anything, but River House came up again. I mean, over the years, we'll get asked, you know.
When down in Oklahoma, I fell in love that night. Did you ask Jimmy the Leary? Why did he lie? Because there ain't no utopia on the other side someday.
Is Robert doing any music these days?
Nope. He hasn't done any music for a very long time, apart from like a guest vocal on a CD a few years back that Anthony Delez and Leo Carrara of Shadows, or past version of Shadows, did. They have their own act together, and then they brought Robert in.
Then what happens when you don't have someone to think about? There's a phantom.
Robert's not singing and writing at this point. He was just super prolific. Songs were pouring out of the guy. And I just never envisioned back then that there'd be a time in which that would just come to a halt. And, you know, he wouldn't be producing, he wouldn't be writing or anything. But that's kind of where he's been. To even, you know, get the interview for Love and War, that was work. I mean, again, he agreed to it, but he dropped in and out of picture, and it was, you know, difficult to get that part completed. But that's just how he wants to be. He's pretty much somebody who wants to be off the grid at this point, and so he is.
You could be mine. I'll be there anytime. You could be mine.
If you guys have any questions, you can certainly can email me at altrecords@aol.com, or just find us on Facebook. There's a Robert Vaughn Facebook group, or you can find me on Facebook and also message me as well.
If you're still in a Robert Vaughn mood, check out In the Corner Back by the Woodpile episode 253, where both Randy Layton and Mike Rowe from the 77s talk about the previous record, Love and War. In addition, Layton was on episode 203 to talk about his life and interactions with all the artists we've already mentioned, in addition to Daniel Amos, Keith Green, and others. And hey, one last thing. A friend of mine, filmmaker Todd Zeller, and I have created a new podcast called Orphans of God, and it is going to be about all things related to Christianity, ranging from music to history to theology to missions, etc. Our first couple episodes are already posted, and that is our interview with rapper Soup the Chemist of Brainstorm Artist International fame. And you can find Orphans of God on Spotify, iTunes, and all the other platforms.
In the Corner Back by the Woodpile is produced by A Closet, A Pocket, and A Suitcase. You can listen to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or podbean.com. If you'd like to send us some hate mail, you can email us at spuncounterguy@hotmail.com. See ya, and I wouldn't want to be ya.